This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Jobs for Negatron. Number 1. Villa Park Stadium announcer.
Please keep off the grass at all times. Encroaching the field of play will lead to a lifetime ban. That includes you, Whelan and Bjarnason.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
Lansbury comes onto it, still Lansbury, fantastic strike by Henry Lansbury. He was given the space and he's arrowed that one in off the inside of the post. Well, talk about making an impact.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com, and the usual guy joining me, Dan Rogers from the villaunderground.com. Welcome!
Hello! I am back for more. Why have Villa had their Christmas party and we haven't had ours?
It's a very good question. It's a bit early. Mm. And why does always somebody dress up as a Power Ranger at these things? I mean, it's the 80s, 90s? Can't you think of a better costume? I'm talking to you, Jack Grealish, than a Power Ranger. I mean, it's a bit lame, isn't it?
I'd have had him more as the pink one as well.
What was Jedinak? What, I don't know, what film is it from? A blue monkey dressed up with wings. Is it from, like, Wizard of Oz or something?
Mm, didn't have him down for a Wizard of Oz fan.
Do you know what I'm talking about? The blue monkey suit with the wings, and it's got, like, those monkeys wear those little...
How many times have you said monkey?
One of those little red band costume with the little red hat and the little golden breast with symbols.
Tell me more about the golden breasts.
I don't know. But yeah, check out the picture. You obviously haven't seen it because you haven't got a clue what I'm talking about.
No, I was more fixated upon Hutton and Gabby's coming to America, to be honest. It was caught my eye.
We'll get on to that in a second. Are you staying up for the cricket or do you just wake up in the morning to see if England have performed a miracle?
It will have to be a miracle. Listen, we need 178 as it stands. So when this podcast goes out, it'll either be the greatest ever run chase in history. Or
are they chasing like something like 350 and that's only been done 10? They've only attempted that 10 times before. I don't know if that's like away from England and they failed every time.
Yeah, I don't think we've ever got more than 100. I think it's is the statistic. But you know, as we've proven before, you can read what you want into statistics and you can stick them.
I'm a passive cricket fan, although I do go like once a year. But I kind of quite enjoy the just waking up in the morning and like you kind of come into your senses and you go, oh, just see what's been going on down under.
I do kind of envy Villa fans in the other hemisphere actually, because they can wake up and go, huh, yes, lost again, rather than last 7 years, they can just wipe.
But that losing mentality is long gone now.
Yes, Mr. we are winners.
Mr. Rogers, Mr. Rogers, and we are now of the winning creed. Anyway, let's go into the 3 points of the week, and let's go straight into the, a couple of things on the Gabbyster. Number one, coming to America, which we are referring to the Christmas party.
That was a good outfit.
But the fun thing about this was I just posted it with the famous line from Coming to America, "The royal penis is clean, Your Highness." Yes. And I just, that's all I put in, and put it on Facebook and Twitter. And on Facebook, I mean, it always happens. People take things literally, and they just saw that picture. And what they saw in their eyes, in what was going on in their heads, was here's somebody who thinks he's a fucking king, dressed up as some kind of...
like Mugabe.
Thinking he's all that or something. And there's, you know, this big, long paragraph tirade against him and what a, you know, parasite he is, blah, blah, blah. Until people are saying... Dude, chill. It's just a Christmas party. It's fancy dress. Have you seen Coming to America?
Jesus
but
Christ.
To his credit, I thought that was the best costume of the lot.
I would agree. I would totally agree. I thought it was a really good... He pulled it off very well as well. Even
he did.
With the draped... the draped leopard skin over his shot, it was perfect.
Yeah, to his credit, and obviously this his football achievements while this podcast has been running are next to zero, apart from the odd goal against the Blues.
Yeah, that's it.
Probably in his top three Villa contributions.
Of all time.
But within the same week, it was the Bruce quote, wasn't it? Saying he should feel free to approach other clubs.
He can, into the last 6 months, isn't he, Eve? As of January, so it's a mad situation that he got himself back into some sort of shape and, don't even say contention, because a couple of the local press is sort of suggesting that he was back and firing and was going to be the answer to all of our prayers. I remember it slightly differently, that he came back, he scored on the opening day, and got dropped after the terrible defeat to Cardiff. I thought it was...
Yeah.
And then he got injured, not that he was some sort of resurgent...
And he hardly ever gets injured on the actual pitch. It's always behind closed doors.
So. Yeah, weird that.
Not that I'm being cynical or anything.
Very odd, isn't it?
But well, it's not even a conversation. He should try to go somewhere else.
It was something I mentioned off air to you, and I'm sure we've discussed it before. He's only 31, and it's bonkers that he is past it. And he's given us great moments across the years. Those single moments, a lot of them in the Blues derbies, but. We need to move on now, and I think that this is... Well, there was the debate, wasn't there, before he should have gone to Reading. He had that opportunity to go to Reading, and he turned it down, and he actually got bagged out by the owner, didn't he, for not taking that move.
Hypothetically, where do you see him ending up?
What kind of
level?
I see him probably some... I wouldn't be surprised if a team took a punt on him in our division.
Yeah.
You know,
I think they'd half his wages at least.
I think that's always been the barrier, hasn't it? That, you know, even when that Reading move was mooted, I would have thought Villa would have been heavily subsidising that. The negotiation swung the other way, hasn't it, now? Because Gabby needs two things. He probably needs to secure a move so that he's, you know, he can... I mean, he's not a poor man, but he can command a wage somewhere.
Yeah.
And the other thing is he needs to be playing, doesn't he? Because he's not playing any football. So
yeah, well, apparently he's back in training now, and he's started. The local press are starting to write about him as if he's the answer to back up Davis.
It's bizarre. I don't get it. For me, Davis is going to start. The only thing that will dictate it will be injury or absolute fatigue for Davis. I think I just don't see Gabby being in Bruce's thoughts, and I really do think the second that the transfer window opens, I think we'll be in the market for someone.
Yeah, and I mean at the moment, I would. Say them. I mean, I think Bruce will try to get a young, let's say, top six or seven teams, and just see who's on their stockpile.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Is it James Wilson of Manchester United who was on loan at Derby last season,
right,
having
yeah.
been at Brighton before? But he got injured very early on in the season, so that kind of curtailed making any impression there. That's why we never heard about him last season. So, I mean, I checked his record for United reserves or under 23s, as they refer to them now.
Mm.
I think he scored like 5 in the last 5 games. I mean, he's regularly putting them in. And he scored a couple of goals on his United debut for proper a couple of seasons ago.
Yeah, no doubt.
So I'd rather have him than a Gabby.
Well, exactly, and I think...
Just a natural finisher.
A natural finisher. I mean, Gabby's struggled with his finishing. We've discussed
always,
that to death, haven't we?
Yeah,
I mean, it's not... We know everything there is to know about Gabby, and I think we need to just draw a line. And the other thing is that if this is genuinely going to be a push for promotion, be it through automatics, which I think will be a stretch as us at the moment, but into the playoffs, I think we need far more reliable firepower, both in terms of availability and goals.
Just on the same subject, Alan Hudson is also approaching his end, well, last year of his contract. So where do you see that one going?
I think if we don't make it up, I could see that being renewed or extended. I think if we get promoted, I think you'll see Hudson move on.
Yeah, no, I was going to say exactly the same thing. I mean, we've got a few, right.
Goodness me, you're a learned follower of this football club.
We've got a few right backs, and Alan Hudson is not a Premier League right back anymore. I mean, we know why. Because yes, effort, yes, tackles, but you need more in the modern day in terms of going forward.
10 out of 10 for effort, but I think that he's another one. We know everything about him, and it depends on what path our club takes, I think, over the next 6 months.
Number two, John Terry. John Terry snapped as in pictured, in a Chelsea kit at Chelsea's, is it Cobham? The rehabilitation facility? By David Luiz, Chelsea shorts, Chelsea top. I actually saw your Twitter response and to this, You don't care that he's now playing for Chelsea.
He can rehabilitate. My tweet was that he can rehabilitate at Small Heath in a mankini. It really doesn't matter. That I think this notion, this romantic idea that John Terry is sleeping under an Aston Villa bed quilt every night in the North Stand is a bit bizarre. At the end of the day, he's got all that history, all that career at Chelsea. Obviously, got a home nearby. Knows all the facilities, knows all the people there.
Like he's got a key to the facilities as well.
Key to the facilities. Which is great. I wonder if they could take some of our other crocked players. My point is really, I don't think it really matters. I'm not saying that it's my default setting for all footballers who we might have on our books, but I don't see any harm in this at all. And I'm just going to make one comparison, because it's not a question of his commitment either, because Terry was at Leeds. Terry was at QPR, etc., etc. Yeah. Who wasn't? I didn't see Gabby anywhere.
But no, in terms of John Terry, there's three things you really need to know about him, really. And one is he is a committed footballer and, winner for Villa. The second is he likes to put every meal that he eats on Instagram. the third one is he does really genuinely love Chelsea.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know what... I don't see there being a problem, really, it's...
Yeah, there's no problem. Let's move on.
Yeah.
There's no problem. And the third thing, and this isn't a Villa one, but it's somebody who now has scored the same amount of goals as Gabby this season, and that's Benevento's goalkeeper, Alberto Brignoli, whose goal is one of the best goals I've ever seen, I think.
Yes, the celebration was superb.
But Benevento hadn't secured 1 point in Serie A this season. So they were there, played 14, lost 14.
Yeah.
And they were at home to AC Milan. And AC Milan not going great guns at the moment. I mean, all kinds of problems at that club at the moment. While Inter march on at the top. And they were 2-1 down. I think it was the 94th minute. They had a free kick. I think the commentator says, this has to be a good one. And he chips it in, if you haven't seen the video. And flying header by the goalkeeper had come up for the free kick. Like a like a salmon. Just flung himself at the ball with his eyes closed as well.
Oh, and
what a finish. And the celebrations, everybody. It kind of brought back... Why you like football. It was just one of those moments where you can appreciate, the joy in the supporters, obviously having a shitty season and not expected to do anything. But it was a great, great footballing moment.
I think there's something, as you say, innate about that type of goal. The story of, of Benevento not even having a point. And that's one of those things, when I saw the video, I thought, surely that can't be right. It's December.
Yeah.
And you're Googling, oh, God, it's true. And also that childish thing, that inner child of a goalkeeper scoring as well. And we were talking off air, or I was mentioning off air about the Schmeichel goal for Villa, that when they happen, you don't appreciate how rare They are when they do occur. And
I mean, the Schmeichel one was just a consolation goal.
It was a nondescript, meaningless.
So this one, to actually have significance, was a real, real big deal. And it was a kind of romantic significance, because it's not as if they were winning anything or anything. It was their first point of the season.
First point in Serie A as well, wasn't it?
Exactly. Right, moving on. Just want to thank a couple of patrons and apologise to one, Dr. Ali Hamard, who I pronounced his name wrong last time. Sorry, I should have realised the two A's is pronounced Ard. But thank you very much for joining us as a patron, and also to Dean Gregory as well for signing up. Please do support the show. Let's try to get to 100 patrons by the turn of the year. Go to myomansaid.com and click on the patron option in the menu bar for more details. We should all be bringing you this week a bonus Patreon podcast addressing some of the issues that supporters have got in touch with us about. We'll be discussing things like the lack of passion in the stands. Also, surely there must be a better option than Samba. And also supporters' concerns about the various parasites still at the club, and will we be able to get rid of them in January. So do sign up, and as well as rewards. And by the way, they've got a few bit of a bounty coming for Christmas, it seems, if today was anything to go by. So do sign up, and as well as reward draws, there's also bonus podcasts, and you support the show in a massive way. Right, let's move on to the last game, which was against Leeds United at Elland Road.
Leeds, Yorkshire.
I enjoyed the game in a weird way.
At the end, I was probably the most satisfied I've felt, not the most, but one of the most satisfying results of the season, because it showed that we had a bit of a backbone. We actually witnessed the miracle of all miracles, Steve Bruce actually making a decisive substitution move. And it showed we weren't this kind of lily white, weak willed, wishy washy team as we were last season. One point before we go into it: 65th minute subs came on, Grealish and Lansbury. Last season, 67th minute, pretty much the same time, Grealish came on. It was 0-0 at that time. Within a minute, Leeds had scored. And then they obviously scored again and won 2-0. So that, symbolically, I think, is pretty much sums up the transition from last season to this season. Subs come on and it turns the result positively in our favour, not just, desperately, let's put him on just to try something. But the first half, good God, it looked like there was no way we were going to get out of that.
I think we approached the game all wrong. I think we saw for the first time the major shortcoming with a player like Samba, where, I think we've been, we're always fair, I think, with players at the club, but his defending for that corner was absolutely atrocious. And
is it fair to single him out for that? Because I think he was caught flat-footed, but I remember the commentator saying, oh, he should be goal-side. He was goal-side. It was just that guy... Yeah. The ball was pinging towards him, it was an outswinger, and he took a leap on Samba. It was almost like Samba had to, I think it was like the zonal marking. He had to pick him up, but before he even, the light bulb went off, it was in the net.
Yeah, I think it was the lack of anticipation, perhaps, flat-footedness, lack of Samba's the centre-half. He has to expect that the player, if it's not the player he's marking, you've just got to get in front of that ball. And he was nowhere near it for me. I'm quite positive on Samba. I think he's not particularly cultured, but generally quite effective. That was the first moment where I thought, wow, you've cost us there. What I would say, though, is...
you have to give credit to Pontus Janssen, because that was sublime. That was what a centre-back should be doing, attacking the corner at speed with such vigour as well.
I'm going to say something controversial about Janssen, and it might stand in contrast to some of the tweets and some of the... He's one of those players who I think fans love to hate, that he was dirty, he was in the referee's ear all the time, he was, feigning injury. Ultimately, I think it cost him for the tackle that he put in on Taylor, that the ball broke to Lansbury for the goal. Dare I say he might be the kind of player we'd want in our squad? Well, I'll leave that out there. I'm not sure if he is or he isn't.
A lot of the players had a similar attitude to him. Mm. Ronaldo Vieira was all over the place in the midfield. Villa were just taken back by the kind of pressing that Leeds were doing. It was like high... high energy or high octane or whatever superlative you want to use. And it forced them back. And there was a massive void between the Villa midfield or the central midfielders and Kieran Davis. And they just couldn't get anything going. And there was no transition or progression. And that's why there was a switch, because the one good thing was there was no way Leeds could keep up that intensity for the whole of the game.
No.
And I think Bruce kind of knew that, and the substitutes that came on were, you obviously instructed them to play further forward, because Lansbury, for example, coming on for Conor Hourihan, who was playing pretty deep, but when Lansbury played, he was playing, you know, further forward across the halfway line and started to dictate play more.
Yeah, I think that the changes were positive, and they immediately swung the game in our favour. It seemed very obvious, I suppose, with the benefit of hindsight, that it immediately gave Leeds something to think about. As you say, the game was switching in terms of stamina and Leeds' ability to maintain that intensity. I thought that it was great to see Lansbury in a more advanced role, which was the role we'd seen him at Forest.
Yeah.
So, and it's kind of like the Hourihan effect, that you anchor Hourihan or Lansbury in front of the defence. It's not their position, it's not their role, it's not the attributes that they've been known to be good for. Grealish came on and had an effect, and that's positive, because, you know, he'd been earmarked, I think, before that horrendous injury. This was to be his season where he could hopefully springboard his own career and us somewhere else. So that's a welcome bit of positive news. And as you said at the outset, really, that it showed for the first time that we had a bit of guile about us, that we sniffed that a team was struggling. I didn't think Leeds were particularly effective at what they were doing. I thought they broke quite well. I thought that they had some tidy looking players. I can see why they're not up at the top of the league, though.
Yeah, because they didn't really have any end product.
No.
You know, they had one shot on target in terms of the stats, which obviously was a goal. I mean, Cooper, the other centre-back, obviously had the ball in the net as well. And that was one of those classic situations where, while it looked like they completely controlled the game, they didn't put the game away.
No, they didn't.
They opened the back door, basically, for Villa to come. And, you know, Villa were always the more likely to win that once they had equalised.
Well, and the other thing about the game was, and it's... I'm starting to sound like a bit of a broken record to some degree with Whelan, is that we won the midfield because we had someone marauding in front of the centre halves, and Whelan just he broke everything up. You know, anything where he had a sniff that he could get in the gap, or, you know, disrupt or put a foot in, he was there. And for teams like Leeds, who try to play quite a technical, you know, modern way of football, which is fine, but when you've got a disruptor like Whelan, who actually, it played some of their, I think, lack of end product played into his hands, because he read it on any number of occasions across the 90 minutes, I thought. And that really did play to our advantage.
Yeah, we were talking about Samba, but I thought Samba, after being caught with his pants down, did, I mean, he played it simple. You saw how it looks like he's been told to play it simple.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, like, when normally you would, you know, there was a clearance on, and instead of welling it up the line, he would just like almost like side foot it out for a throw in. And that was because he was like cautious. He wasn't just going to lash it and it would rebound off a player and then cause confusion. So it was a very measured and controlled performance by Samba, despite...
I thought, aside from the goal, he wasn't, you know, he didn't have a bad game. I think that it's the moments that can cost you. And from my point of view, I look over the 90 minutes. I think if he'd have had that moment of concentration from that corner, which was a pivotal moment of the game as well, that 1-1 draw becomes 0-0 at half time, and you're coming out the other half with all the things that we've been talking around Leeds' intensity and stamina dropping off. To actually, that, I wonder whether that was the game plan, because you look at our setup in the first half, very negative, soak it up. And broadly, we did that, didn't we? You know, they had one chance ultimately, and it came from, in my view, a mistake. Actually, come 60th minute, throw in Grealish and Lansbury, you know, the perfect game plan, really. It still worked in that we managed to claw our way back in. But, you know, it could have been a completely different result, in my view.
Yeah, I think another reason, I don't think Davis was getting any purchase out of Jansen or Cooper. I thought they did very well in terms of their defensive play.
No, he was very isolated, and I think he struggled for it on Omar being...
Because he's very good when he gets the ball of hustling opportunities out of nothing. Because he gets the ball, he turns, he goes direct, and he attacks defenders. But those guys were both Cooper and Johansson are like no nonsense type of players, and they didn't buckle under it.
No,
you know, like, for example, Norwich did.
Yeah, I think something we've said before as well with Davis, and I was just mentioning Onoma, that these are, you know, they're not 20 yet, these guys, and there are going to be games where this is a learning curve as well. you know, as much as anything. And they won't have come across, you know, Janssen's been, you know, is a Swedish international, for God's sake. You know, he's, yeah, he's no mug.
Because they're used to playing under 23 youth level. Yeah. So they, when it comes, yeah, to the bruises, it's a different ball game.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And Omar seems to be doing a good game, bad game, alternating routine.
I put that down to, again, the fact that he's barely old enough to buy a beer. You know, he's still learning his trade. And I think that it is a positive trait. That positive trait is that he'll keep trying to do the right thing. And when you're having a bad day, sometimes you've just got to play it simple. And I think he struggles for that, and it can build up to becoming, you know, the narrative when you look on social media is that suddenly he's a shit player, haul him off.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
bullshit,
pick
yeah.
Lansbury next week, Lansbury must start. Well, hang on a minute, let's just look at why we are where we are. It's not because he had one bad game, or, you know, like, I think on him it's even more that he can have very good 45 minutes, and he's very much, I think, he mirrors Villa, you know, that we have, you know, we struggle to put together 90 good minutes.
Yeah.
You know, when he has a really bad game, I think it sticks out, because actually he's such a technically excellent footballer and links very well with Davis ordinarily, that when it doesn't work for him, it really sticks out, doesn't it?
Yeah, he just seemed a bit flustered, because some of his passing, elementary passing, really, really sloppy. But
youthful confidence, wasn't it? It was one of those.
But yeah, as we've said before, when we're singing his praises, he does inject that kind of electricity into Villa going forward from the midfield.
Mm.
Snodgrass doing his lap of honour. That was quite bizarre. But he seems to be, I've looked into this, he seems to be kind of a virtuous guy when it comes to whatever team he's playing for, their supporters. Because the West Ham fans, some of them at least have spoken highly of him and of his kind of attitude, despite how he was, you know, let's not say he was dealt with badly there, because, you know, maybe he's not good enough to get in the team. You know, it's a matter of opinion, but, it wasn't all plain sailing there. So he kind of kept his head up and his dignity. And then to do the lap of honour against Leeds after 4 years there, despite getting booed and jeered, shows you I think he's a very earnest individual, just in terms of the effort he puts in. Like, you know, it's hard to say Snodgrass plays badly, because I thought Snodgrass would be like a bit of a headline maker for Villa in terms of scoring free kicks and scoring goals, and you know, he'd walk away from Villa with a nice highlights reel. But it's his blue collar graft that's impressed me the most. Yeah,
it's fantastic. Well, yeah, that will be the thing that I'll probably take from Snodgrass, because you know, whether we keep him or not, I think he's contributed massively and continues to. The funny thing with the Leeds thing, and you get the boos and the jeers, is I think we were looking before the game. You know, he's like their second highest ever goal scorer at this level behind McCormack. You know, it's a massive contribution, and he's got all the attributes really to drag you kicking and screaming out of this league. My personal view, and it's not dissimilar to that we've just been saying about Hutton really, is that I can see, and I've mentioned before, why he hasn't made the grade at Premier League level. I think he's got great work ethic, but I don't think he's quite in that notch above a footballer that really is, you know, technically excellent and is the difference.
And do you think Lansbury, I mean, is he, you know, 1 week somebody scores and everybody hails him as, and it's mainly the local media that kind of fuels that. But you just judge his Forest form and the amount of goals he scored. I mean, he's what is he, like a 1 in 4, 1 in 5 kind of player? He scored about 35. I mean, I don't have the stats to hand, but he scored about 35 goals in about 140 appearances or something like that. So his goals in him. And I mean, he scored 6 goals for Forest last season. And I think that was in 17 games. And then in 18 appearances for Villa, he scored Jack all. So he's got goals in him. It's as simple as that.
It's simple. Yeah, I do think it's simple. I think it's very similar to Grealish's situation, is that what we need from Lansbury is consistency. Now, from his point of view, he might take the view, look, one, I need to be playing. I mean, granted, he's had an injury lately, but he played enough last season. But he also needs to be played in the right position.
Yeah, it's Horahan all over again.
He has been... It really hampered us, I think, at the turn of the year when there was this strange decision that Bruce took. And I think it was... Bruce has been very upfront about this, that he... Last season wasn't really about getting promotion. It was about stabilising us, wasn't it? You know, but we were precarious at the turn of the year. And I think what that did was it really hampered the settling in and progression of Lansbury. And so all I see it as being is that, you know, if Lansbury does get picked next week, you know, and we're talking about dropping a player like Onoma to accommodate him, he has to perform to the level that the player going out has been, and perhaps contribute, like you say, that ratio of goals. And I think it's a similar chat for Grealish, really, isn't it?
Well, that's the thing. I think they're all battling for the same position.
I think so. I don't think it's a bad problem to have. And I think we saw at Leeds why you might want to start with a certain combination of players. And then you've got the ability to switch it, because not only does it's not a like-for-like swap, you know. Onuma, Lansbury and Grealish aren't interchangeable. You know, you can't... They're not samey. So that's a good thing. But what it does do, it opens up the issues. What is your best 11 and what's your starting and finishing 11?
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
One thing also is Jedinek now being hardly a surprise, actually, that he's now out, well, at least until January, it seems.
Mm. Which, of course, means he'll probably still play for Australia.
Exactly, he'll be back. He'll play every minute of the World Cup. There's no doubt about that. I mean, he's played less playing time than Gabby has this season, so that kind of shows you the contribution. But he did have a use in terms on the subs bench as being somebody who essentially is covering two positions, centre-back and also midfielder. And also he was Bruce's favourite, his favourite play, wasn't it? Was bringing him on in the last 15 minutes or so just to close up shop. Which I think in this December run of games would have been a useful time. It's probably the most useful contribution or useful period that Jedinek could have played in was this December.
I think it's a big loss. I really think it's a big loss. And as a fan base, probably focusing upon the striker problem, inverted commas, I think that the big worry is we're reliant upon Whelan, who is, what, 33 plus now? And it's a similar discussion. I mean, he's I think he's got the engine in him for the role that we need him for, but it's that interchangeable, you know, three games in a week type situation. The same problem we've got with Samba, really. You know, not having Terry around as the main choice, and then you can swap in and out when you want to. Is that there's no... I can't think of who the next person is, and that's why we bought Whelan, isn't it? It's no more complicated than that.
Yeah, in terms of centre back, though, I mean Tommy Elphick. Let's not forget. He played for Bournemouth as their captain centre back when they got promoted.
He did.
So is this another example of somebody who, like Lansbury, who was the dog's bollocks at Forest, and Conor Hourihan, who was the dog bollocks at Barnsley? Is Tommy Elphick somebody who's suddenly crap when he comes to the Villa?
That's something.
Can Tommy Elphick surely cover four games to some decent standard? Surely he must be able to do that. Or at least at least.
You're baiting me now, because you know I'm a firm believer that a player doesn't suddenly become shit. I mean, Villa have had the amazing ability of coaching the good attributes out of players, but
because he was on the bench, so
he was. The glaring issue that you often see with footballers, and it was the same with Samba at the beginning, and Jedinek and others, when you don't have match sharpness, the worst thing that can happen is you get thrown in when a team really needs you to be performing.
Yes, but he's got a nice FA Cup game against Woking or Peterborough to get him up to speed again.
You see, I heard that would be the Micah Richards testimonial. remember him? I mean, Let's not go there. Can Elphick do a job? He should be able to do a job. He's a well-paid professional footballer with the experience. Practically speaking, you know, I forget the game that he played. It was a bit of a ropey game earlier this season. Cup game, I forget now. But he's in the in and around the periphery of the squad. I'd like to think he'd take a view that it was, at the very least, shop window for him.
Yeah, because, I mean, I'm thinking that's not a crisis position. I mean, that's where I'm coming from here. In this level, we're talking the championships. No. I don't see... He's known as a superior championship defender.
Absolutely. I don't think it's crisis point there. I think the...
There's two crises. I think the two crisis points are at the moment is if there's another injury, if either Whelan gets injured or Keenan Davis gets injured, that's when the problems are.
Correct. And the real worry is if it was to happen now, playing, you know, Prophet of Doom, as I like to, it's a bloody long time till January.
Yeah. In terms of games, it is, yeah.
It's a lot of games.
And we're talking about, I think this is a period... What's the significance of December? I think it decides whether we're an automatic promotion team or not. I don't think it won't affect us getting into the playoffs. It's not going to suddenly knock us out of that. I mean, we could lose all of the games and we'd still be in with a shout for that. Mm. But in terms of automatic promotion, because Wolves are... You know, Wolves' potential banana skin against the Blues. Well, maybe that's being a bit optimistic. I mean, I saw that picture of the halftime entertainment where they boarded up the goal... and I think they put holes in when and fans come on and try to put the ball in, you know, through the holes. But they should have just left it up there. And even then, Blues wouldn't have stopped Wolves. But that was quite impressive. That showed that Wolves can do the nitty gritty as well.
Yeah, I agree. They seem
and
to
then
be
the other ones, Cardiff. Cardiff don't seem to be messing around. I mean, this is obviously your prediction was they were going to fail and drop like a lead balloon. And be lucky to finish in the top half. But I told you, Warnock was sniffing promotion. He's not messing around.
No, they were quite effective against Norwich, weren't they, recently?
And there's always an unlikely team, unlikely from the point of the start of the season, that always pulls a few surprises. Let's not forget Huddersfield were predicted to get to drop.
Well, Cardiff would be the team I would be circling, and I think that's why you're alluding to the doomsday December, aren't you, that... Cardiff are the team, I think, if they've got a couple of injuries and, you know, you've got a big run of games now and, you know they do lose games, Cardiff. Yeah. I think this is the key bit that Wolves, well, what will be with Wolves. Either they're going to continue on this ridiculous run or they'll hit a blip, and I think we need to park that. I think you need to just start circling teams above you, and Sheffield United seem to be on a bit of a wobble for me. And Cardiff, I think, are the ones you want to be circling, saying, right, over the next eight games, this is where we want to be.
Because the thing is, come the second half of the season, your Wolves, Cardiff, Sheffield United all have to visit Villa Park. So
absolutely.
Villa, if they stay in touch with these teams,
absolutely.
Still have destiny in their own hands.
Well, in a league format as well, that's a 9-point swing that you can affect over the top three positions as well. That's massive.
Yeah, when we beat Wolves 5-0 at Villa Park, that will just demoralise them and they'll collapse for the rest of the season.
They'll collapse into the rosé.
Our next 3 points, hopefully, Millwall. Mm. I mean, the headline is they haven't won away from home yet this season.
Mm. Yep, that's...
But
what's the cliche thing is to say, well, we're a better place to come than pay the Villa at Villa Park.
Yeah, and you know, the other saying is, what could go wrong?
Well, we've managed to fashion impressive banana skins of our own. I don't see it with Millwall, I have to admit, that looking before we started, you know, they beat Sheffield Wednesday at home last time out, but even their last three away games, you know, they lost to Sheffield Wednesday, they lost to Fulham, and they only managed to draw with Sunderland, which is the third furthest away game, if you like. And that was at a point when Sunderland were at their very lowest ebb. And you think, well, that's pretty dismal.
I think it's the easiest game we've got in December, if that means anything.
On paper, it certainly is. On paper, it certainly is. And they're the least...
Outside the stadium, maybe not so easy, but,
but
judging by what the police are doing, it's basically going to be police like the Blues derby.
I don't understand this because we covered the arrest league table the last time we met, and you know, I took the liberty of looking at where they came in the League One, you know, firm arrest leagues, you know, behind Sheffield United, Coventry, Bradford. I think they're slipping, to be honest. I mean, if all of Coventry's fans, 34 of them, were arrested last season, and you've come behind them as a firm, you need to look yourself squarely in your Stone Island branded mirror.
Don't tempt them. But one of the reasons why there's this kind of heightened alert to Millwall coming to Villa. I mean, obviously reputations, but you know, most clubs have got reputations like Leeds and Villa, Chelsea.
I think this is fair, is well earned.
The last thing that happened was 2010 when Villa played Millwall in a FA Youth Cup game, and now, you know, set the scene. Anybody who's never been to an FA Cup youth game, this is where, like, yeah, your kind of local fans, kind of diehards, they take their kids, family. It's a cheap season ticket holders getting free. Mm. There'll be a lot of, like, family of the players, and there's a kind of a going to watch Sunday League kind of vibe about it.
Yeah, it's a couple of hundred people normally, isn't it?
It's a bit of a jolly, you know, people drinking soup and coffee. nobody's drinking beers or anything. It's all... So like a family day out or family night out. Now, Millwall, their firm hired a van. There's about 13, 15 of them turned up. And I think they got thrown out around halftime. Or they left after Villa were like 3-0 up. And then they were kind of hanging around and then started allegedly racially abusing fans and kicking up a fuss, and fights broke out and basically terrorising people. And then... allegedly, they went to the petrol station to get petrol to firebomb the adventurers' pub, to go in there and basically ransacked it. And it's like, guys, this is a fucking
youth game.
It's a Tuesday night. What's the point of hiring a bloody van coming up to Villa Park? Because you know, a lot of hooliganism, it's about the fame and it's about the notoriety
infamy.
And you're not going to get that going to a youth game when there's actually no Villa lads there.
There's nobody there.
To actually, you know, claim that you conquered them or whatever. I mean, don't forget, we're fourth in the arrest table, so...
Yeah, fair enough,
if you want to have a go on the match day, that's... you'd understand the mentality, but a youth game, that's just bizarre. But so the incidents from 7 years ago are one of the reasons why there's this kind of heightened alert. But the funny thing is, made me laugh, was the headline... I think it was the Birmingham Mail, where they say, "Please say, Millwall fans, welcome at German Market." It's like, oh fuck! If you any plans on the German Market on Saturday, I wouldn't go if I was you. Maybe Sunday would be better.
That's the reason those giant concrete bollards have gone down. It's got nothing to do with counter terror. It's in case they drive their minivan down there. The lads are turning out for a sausage.
Let's say Millwall have come for trouble. It's just, I think that's bizarre.
Yeah, don't even bring it up.
Isn't it reckless? Isn't it reckless to go, yeah, everybody's welcome to the German market for one big, you know, where you can walk around with a big 2-litre tankard of glass to whack somebody in the face with.
Club someone to death with a giant sausage in a tankard.
It's
fucking ram an ostrich burger down your throat, you middle class bastards.
As well as the game, I'm quite intrigued to find out how the German market pans out on a Saturday evening. Good luck. Jesus. Good luck with that one.
May you all rest in peace.
City of Birmingham. Who are the Blues playing? I don't know who the Blues playing, but if they see the German market alert, because they've got some beef with Millwall as well as Villa, so it'd
just
be like a bit of a three-way... it's like that WWF where everybody gets in the ring and who lasts the longest. Who can stay the longest in the German market?
God, cage fights. Like, I don't know, maybe they'll all sit down drinking mulled ciders and reminiscing about the old times when they were stamping on each other's faces.
In the perfect world, that would be a nice... the German market is a place, it's like a neutral ground where everybody shares cigarettes and buys each other beers. Anyway, it'll be fun, I'm sure. It'll all be peaceful and fun. Right, let's just finish. We still haven't come up with a name for it yet, this closing segment. We'll still go with the provisional title of Under the Hammer, which where we give a verdict on various listener concerns. I want to go for Emmett Sutton's as the first one, which is something I found quite interesting. I think we spoke about this. I don't know if we spoke about this on the show or if it was just socially. There was an article in the Birmingham Mail where I don't think we should call the Birmingham Mail. It should be the Bruce Mail, really. But where they were saying, oh, he deserves credit. I mean, Bruce deserves credit, full stop. But, you know, fans know that. They don't need to be told to think that. But one of the things, well, the only thing they said was, oh, he's been really unlucky with injuries. I'll just read this point out, because this is it's another way of looking at it. This is Emmett Sutton. I'm still not a fan of Bruce, but can't argue with the results. expected max 5 points out of four with a game to go, and we have 9 from 9. I think this is before the Leeds game. I think he and we have been lucky with injuries. Sounds strange, but Green injured promoted Adoma, a right-sided player on the left, and that has been a revelation. Also, Codger injury has forced leading line with Davis, which has us playing better. Now, this kind of echoes one of my thoughts. Bruce has been lucky with injuries in this kind of warped, it's not really a warped way of thinking about it. But there's two sides of the coin here. Yes, we've missed Codger, Green, but you know, we spent a lot of time talking about Green and saying why he's not the finished article yet, because he always runs it down the same channel. And look at the difference between how Adoma cuts in and almost becomes a centre forward when the ball's on the right-hand side. And the fact, it hasn't been almost like proactively direct of Bruce switching things around and coming up with like super formations. His hand has been forced because Green went. And the big thing about Villa going into this season was what we're going to do. We've got loads of right-sided midfielders and defenders, but we've got nothing on the left. If Green goes, we got rid of Amavi. And if Green goes, what are we going to do? Because Adoma was Mr. Right Wing and played right wing the whole of right-sided midfield all of last season. And also Neil Taylor, once he's croc, what's going to happen? And every time one of those players has gone out, we've had to play a right-sided player on that flank. And with Adoma, it hit gold, but it wasn't like planned, was it?
I sort of half agree with it, with what Emmett's saying. I think that Bruce has had his hand forced with injuries and has stumbled upon a couple of combinations that have definitely helped. What I also think it's helped him with is it has perhaps saved him a couple of decisions that he might have had to have taken around people's poor form and forced this, you know, and he hasn't had to be forced to make that glaring public switch, I think. I'll use the two players that are mentioned in Emmett's email to us that I think Green stood to be dropped anyway. I think he was suffering second season blues. You know, you can refer back to the earlier podcasts where I think everyone knows about the talent that he offers, but he was struggling big time. What that caused, I suppose, was that Bruce looked into the market, got Snodgrass, and Adoma's switch had nothing to do with Green's injury. It had to do with the fact that Snodgrass plays on his wrong foot on the other wing. So what that's maybe done is it's switched Adoma into a position where he can cut
in. But there was nobody else.
No, there was nobody else, but what I'm saying is the Green injury prompted us to go into the market for Snodgrass, didn't it? Is that right? Is it wrong? I don't know.
I mean, it seemed an odd one because, I mean, we were thinking, well, we've got Elmo and Adoma for that right-hand flank. And then we brought Snodgrass and, you know, we know he's a left-footer and you're thinking, oh, okay. And then you're thinking, then he's saying, oh, I only play on the right-hand side, fools.
So
then you're like, I'd have to look back on the timeline. I mean, to be honest, I haven't actually picked the best example there. I mean, the biggest example was how Davis has almost changed everything. And, you know, he's brought us together as a team and he's got other people contributing goals, which we drastically needed because Codger, essentially, it was all about him in terms of the goals.
Well, and he wasn't scoring, was he, when he got his injury? Because he hasn't looked right since he got the original ankle injury. I don't think anyone would disagree with that. So it is another way of looking at it, I guess, is correct, yeah.
If without the injuries, Davis would have made a few subs appearances by now, I think. I couldn't have seen him, if Codger's fit, if Hogan's fit, I couldn't have saw, you know, at the start of the season, I don't see him starting in Bruce's mind.
No.
I mean, Green, I can see him being benched because of form and having a bit of a switcheroony around there. But, you know, Green really needed to be drip-feeded in and out of the team rather than being the number 11 position as his, because he was showing he needed he needed a bit of time to learn as well, sitting on the bench as well as just doing what he was doing. He was making progress, but we're trying to get promoted, so we're not like a... you know, a charity, if you know what I mean. And it's definitely a valid point, I think.
It's really interesting to think about it because it's interesting how it's framed as well, that not being a fan of Bruce, but you can't argue with the results. I don't think many people would disagree with that, that there are infuriating parts or very confusing ways in which Bruce approaches games. But you can often arrive at the end when we've won or we've spoken about some of the very obvious things that Bruce will do in terms of game management every week that aren't subtle at all, but they're damn effective a lot of the time. For instance, the switch, you know, with the bringing on of Samba with a few minutes to go, or, you know, Jedinak, like he was doing with Jedinak, for instance, you know, that sort of thing. It's just shut up shop, isn't it, really? It's yeah. not cultured in any way, but it's you're protecting what you've got.
But the thing is now, I don't think there's not that much room to get lucky with any more injuries. That's the problem.
I would agree. Yeah, we're at the bare bones now.
Codger, you know, I'm not bothered. Terry, you know, as long as it's not super long term, that's not a problem. Jedinak was actually, even though he's, as I said, played less than Gabby and Bjarnason, you could see his use through this winter period and how he could shut up shop and also give us legitimate options, you know, whether it's covering Terry or Whelan as well. So that was my, I suppose, more of a concern than the two. I mean, Codger gives you... he gives you something different going forward and he can snatch a game from out of nowhere. I don't think he's the ideal player to be playing as your, you know, legit striking option.
No.
Because I don't think he creates the team that we have now.
No, I agree.
I'm just thinking of like the Sheffield Wednesday game, even Leeds, you throw him on there just to, you know, go for it because he can score out of nothing. We'll see. But as I said, yeah, no more injuries, please. Because I think the looks run out in that respect. Other question. This is a question looking for the future. I think we kind of touched on it. And was it the last episode? Anthony Smythe says, how prepared are we for the Premier League? Johnson, Snodgrass, Anomar, Samba and Terry all due to leave at the end of the season. Number of players most likely to not have their contracts renewed. A number of players in the twilight of their careers. Whelan, Hutton, Jedinak. Well, we aren't in the Premier League yet, and I think if we do go in the Premier League, we have to rebuild right from the off. And
absolutely,
as we spoke about last time when we touched on this, because I think I said last time there was only really Chester who was a legitimate Premier League player.
Chester and question mark with Hourihane, I think we said we would hope he would flourish to become a Premier League player.
And so then you're hoping that Lansbury, Hourihane, Grealish even, they actually step up and become Premier League players. Because at the moment, I mean, Hourihane's doing all right, but not on the Barnsley level yet. But the other two aren't even kicking on in this league.
No.
So suddenly you're struggling to think of who's going to be in the first 11 now in the Premier League. And then you're thinking about, I hope we can keep Johnston or Anomar. Or, you know, even Snodgrass. But those guys aren't going to be playing for Villa if we don't get promoted. So that would be those three out. The only way of keeping them or extending, you know, loans, I don't think it'll be an extension of a loan. They'll be trying to buy them.
Yeah.
Will be to stay in the Premier League. So we are not prepared for the Premier League in any shape or form, I don't think.
No, and I think it's two things for me. I think if we don't get promoted, there'll be a natural culling anyway because those players will have failed us. If we do get promoted, I think that you look at the model of teams that have survived and then managed to kick on. Thinking principally of your Bournemouths is that they drag themselves kicking and screaming of whatever fashion out of the division, and then they say, right, who, you know, you have to be ruthless, I think, and, you know, take Elphick, you know, a captain who'd led them from the lower divisions. Second they got promoted, he was gone. You know, it was one of those, really.
Works both ways. I think if we don't get promoted, there'll be a massive cull as well. Because, I don't think those lone players will come back. Johnson will go Premier League. Chester, I think, will even try to get out because you can't really expect him to play three seasons in the Championship if he's got any ambition. He's in the prime of his career.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we'd probably get Hutton back because his contract's up. He'd probably stay if we're in the... But then again,
he's got a year or two left in him, hasn't he?
If we don't get up with Hutton now, who's saying that we're going to get up next season? But we've already got Bree. I think we'd just go with Bree, wouldn't we? And Richie Dillette would probably be sold.
Yeah.
And you got an older Jedinak, as this guy says. He's in the twilight of his career. He's not going to be as good as he is now. And, you know, he's injured now.
Yeah, if we don't get promoted, I think you'd see a natural culling of, you know, we'd unfortunately be back into transitional stage again and looking to build something to as a platform to get out of the division. And Premier League, you know, we know what our relegated team looked like from the Premier League and that. You know, that was a mishmash of has-beens and players that were just never good enough. And, you know, it's a massive task because I think promotion would be a fantastic achievement. But then it would open up the door to the reality of having to buy seven or eight players just to stand still. And yeah. Those have to be the right seven or eight players. It can't be Moneyball.
Yeah, and this is one of the things, as I said to the question, we are not prepared. And we aren't a team that... We have been put together with a series of, like, elder statesmen, loans, to do one job, and that's get up. This isn't a team that's come through together like your Leicesters and Bournemouth and Swansea have over the years, and Burnley and Huddersfield, and yeah, even Brighton as well.
Yeah, Bob, yeah, they've all instilled these...
Where the nucleus of the team and the way they play and their attitude, they keep with it, obviously, in the Premier League. Obviously, they're going to buy, to use the immortal term, quality. They're going to add some quality to their team with like 3, 4, 5 players. But the essence and their, you know, the ethos of the team... It is still there. It's still instilled, the kind of mentality that got them up. And, you know, these teams are successfully staying up in the league. And, I mean, Burnley were sixth, knocking on the door of the Champions League places until, I mean, they got robbed a bit against Arsenal when Arsenal visited there. We will literally be building from the foundations upwards. Not a bad thing, not an easy thing, though.
Absolutely.
One more quick question. Joe Seville and a couple of people have... questioned this about the players like McCormack, Gabby and Richard stealing a wage, but this has been going on at Villa for a while now. It's when they mistakenly get them on these big contracts, pay them big money, and these players suddenly lose appetite for it because they know that for however long, 3, 5 years, they're going to be paid 40, 50, 60,000 a week. Suddenly the will to play football or the need to be intensive, you know, about playing it and the drive to do it just kind of evaporates when you've got that money sitting in your bank and you're starting to think of how to invest it and spend it.
I agree with all those things, and we've discussed, you know, the flop that is McCormack for whatever reason, Gabby's malaise of a career, and Richards is the case study of how not to develop as a 17-year-old footballer with the, you know, the world at your fingertips, really. I think the only thing about the three, and there's countless examples in modern football now, and I was thinking about this the other day, is that it must be the only job that's, you know, considering how richly rewarded it is financially and with all the other trappings that come with it, no doubt, is that if your capability of doing that job is in question, how you're not in breach of your own employment contract? I don't understand that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not something that I'm going to dwell on any great length, but I just find it baffling because, like you say, that you know, clubs like Villa and anyone else really will pay big money to get the talent as they see it. That talent will say, yeah, I'll come and I will deliver my talent, my said talent, and they don't. And you've got no recourse for that. I find that amazing.
There should be some way of, when you're trying to buy a player, you've got to, you know, offer them incentives to get them in. But I'm just wondering if there's any way in contracts you can say, if you make less than blah, blah, blah. You know, it's always like if you make, you know, you get appearance bonuses, you get goal bonuses, and maybe have something in, like, in the second season, if you make less than 20 appearances, your, you know, wages will be cut the next year by, you know, X amount of percent. Something that's, like, soft enough to make the player think, well, that's not going to happen to me, so let's sign this, because the original terms are great. Because if you start putting in, like, negative things like that, it's just going to put them off, and they'll say, well, I'm going to go to Everton instead, because they're offering me the same without all the bullshit.
Just taking the three names that Joe has sent us, so you've got McCormack, Gabby and Richard. So McCormack, you've got a player who blatantly wasn't turning up for work.
Yeah.
Gabby had any number of misdemeanors over the years that any other job it would be gross misconduct. And Richards is actually incapable of playing a game of football. Why? Stealing a wage is as close and accurate a statement from Joe as I think you're likely to see.
I kept having hope for Richards because I'm sure that's the, you know, the reason why they got him in. They just thought, this is like free transfer. This is
there's a reason things are free, David.
Yeah, nothing.
Like
there's nothing
podcast.
In life. Nothing in life is for free. Please become a patron. Patron on the menu bar, myomensaid.com. Yeah, nothing in life is for free. I think when Bruce took the job, he thought, Richards, I can be the man, like you thought with Gabby. I'm the man who saves us a few bob in the long run and actually gets some use out of these players. Because he put him in the squad initially, and then he kind of thought, oh my God, Remy Gard was right.
Oh, dear.
Poor old Remy Gard, stuck in Canada now.
Yeah, he's, what's he, he's managing the Montreal Mongooses or something, isn't he?
Which, considering he was meant to be like the, one of the great, the new Wenger and all this kind of stuff, he's I think Villa just shot him through. I think he's shot his nerves through and everything.
A long line of broken individuals having had an association with that football club.
Right, well, until the next show, and I don't know if there's going to be a next show. It depends if I decide to go to the German market on Saturday and make it out alive. But I think I'll give that a wide berth. I just have to think of a way to get to Villa Park that negates going through the town centre.
Maybe the Millwall will drop you off in their van.
Oh, yeah, I'll go on their message board, see if they can give me a lift. Right, until the next podcast that may never happen due to RIP status, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from him.
Goodbye.
My old man said...
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.